Looking at Variety in Nursing Careers, Nurse-Patient Staffing Ratio Studies, the top 12 NCLEX prep apps, and we'll have a special interview segment with the authors of PostGrid about their experiences as healthcare professionals and writing an exciting and engaging novel. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, our podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome all of you and thank you for checking out the program this week. We've got a great show for you coming up. In this week's nursing news items, we're going to be looking at how many different ways nurses influence change in healthcare across various settings and for various patient populations. That article is from a post by my friend Elizabeth Scala for her Art of Nursing program she runs each year for Nurses Week. Then I interview ER nurse Nancy Martineau and her husband Tony, a deputy U.S. Marshal and paramedic, about their excellent post-apocalyptic novel, PostGrid. Learn how they applied their medical experiences to this book and what their plans are for a sequel in the future. We'll have that and more coming up later on in this episode after the news. Before we get to the news, though, I'd like to make sure that you follow up on all of the information from this and every episode by heading over and checking out the site at nursingshow.com. You can check out the links there in each episode's show notes. There are also other resources, articles, links, and things that you can find there to help you out, whether you're a student, whether you're looking for the Nursing Show mobile app, or anything else. But I want you to head over and make sure you follow up on what we talk about in the show each week so you understand how it's applied to your own nursing scope of practice. If you do want to get back in touch with me, I want you to, so drop me an email. Send those emails in to me at nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you, and I make sure I respond back to every email that comes in, so send me things. You can send me links to news items you want me to cover, interview suggestions with you or somebody you know. Whatever it is, I want to hear from you, so keep them coming. That's it. I'll have some more contact information later on in this episode at the end of the show, but let's go ahead and get on into the rest of this week's show with the news items. They are coming right up. First up in our news items for nurses this week is a look at a new article I found over at my friend's site written by Elizabeth Scala. Elizabeth, you may remember, is a nurse, author, educator, and advocate who focuses on helping nurses find the art of nursing in their practice. In this article, she looks at the ways nurses are advocating for various diverse patient populations in different care settings. Now, we've had one of the nurses featured in this article on the show in the past. Lori Shaunley is an expert in nursing in the correctional care setting. And we look at what unique challenges must be faced by prison nurses around the country. She talks with Elizabeth about that in the article a little bit. Another interesting look at diverse patient populations is a look at patient care for our patients of various genders, including transgender patients. Nathan Levitt is a nurse practitioner in New York City who specializes in the care of oncology patients for his day job, but his true passion appears to be the education and advocacy about transgender patients in healthcare settings. Nurses have to learn to be sensitive to the specific health concerns of this patient group and also adopt new communication norms when talking with them. Even the use of simple things like pronouns like he or she can be perceived as insensitive or be a block to effective communication. So I'm going to reach out to Nathan, actually, and hopefully get him on the show in a future episode so that maybe we can address this issue for you here on The Nursing Show as a member of the audience. In the meantime, I'm curious about what you're doing to help you approach people in various populations, like the transgender population, with a caring and supportive environment for their care. Is this something you even thought about? If you want to get more out of it and check out amazing guests like Nathan and Lori, I definitely recommend heading over and checking out Elizabeth Scala's program for Nurses Week. That's The Art of Nursing. I'll have a link in the show notes for her site, or you can just go to elizabethscala.com and check it out. But I want you to check it out and maybe sign up for this amazing regenerative program for nurses. Next up in our nursing news, let's take a look at a hot topic I've covered here on the show many times in the past. When are hospitals out there going to make the changes needed to improve nurse-to-patient staffing ratios? This is an important question when we look at the continued evidence pouring in about the positive effect of lower nurse-to-patient staffing levels and what they do for good patient outcomes. A new study published recently in the British Medical Journal looked at the effect of nurse and physician staffing levels on patient mortality rates in hospitals in the UK. The goal was to determine where staff cost-cutting measures would have the greatest effect. Well, it certainly isn't in nursing care based on what they discovered. When the nurse staffing ratio is at least one nurse per six patients, the mortality rate for the hospital as a whole dropped 20% when compared to staffing ratios of 1 to 10 or more. Now, I'll let that sink in for a minute. That's one out of every five patients still alive because of better nurse staffing levels. So how do hospitals, healthcare corporations, and our lawmakers still drag their heels on getting solid nurse staffing measures in place for every facility in the country? This most recent study backs up every other study I've seen on the subject. There aren't any dissenting opinions that I've seen. This recent study in the UK looked at data from hundreds of hospitals and interviewed nearly 3,000 nurses as part of the study over the course of a year. Now, this is one benefit they have in a national healthcare system. They can actually do broad studies of the entire system like this and examine care in that situation very easily. Based on this research and the fact that it's being put out there for public consumption, it might not be that long before hospitals actually start using something like this in their promotional material to compete for patients here in the U.S. Will nurse staffing levels be a selling point for getting patient dollars in the door? I don't know. We're going to have to see. Finally, in the show's final segment for nurses this week, let's go ahead and take a look at an article provided by our partners at pocketprep.com. As we wind down the spring semester for student nurses in our audience, you might start to look at NCLEX tests, or even for the advanced practice nurses out there preparing for preparation services and programs for your advanced practice exams. The Pocket Prep team sent me a look at the top 12 nursing prep apps out there and the cost-effective solutions they provide for students taking different exams at the end of this semester or over the coming spring and summer. Now, all of these exam prep apps contain features that can help you pass your exams on the first try, and it saves you the cost of paying to repeat exams, enabling you to start earning more money as you progress in your career. Now, these features include things like practice questions that cover all topic areas in an exam's official content outline, the ability to use the app even when offline, like when you're on an airplane, bus, or train, detailed answer rationales that can help you understand the concepts being tested in the exams, study reminders, questions of the day, helpful test-taking hints, in-app customer service, and other similar features. The apps mentioned continue to include things like critical care nursing certifications, nurse practitioners in various specialties, and others in the healthcare field. I'll have a full list of them in the Nursing Show site and an article this coming Wednesday after this episode is released, so check it out over there. And share it with your nursing student friends and those that are advancing into different certifications. And thanks to pocketprep.com for sharing this article and links with me here as a sponsored post at The Nursing Show. The authors of PostGrid, Tony and Nancy Martineau, met while in college working on an ambulance in the Phoenix metro area. They've been married almost 30 years. Nancy is a nurse specializing in emergency and pre-hospital medicine. Tony is a former deputy U.S. Marshal and flight paramedic who continues to work in law enforcement and as a wildfire line medic. Together, they decided to take their passion for search and rescue, medical care, and disaster preparedness and write their post-apocalyptic novel about a nurse finding her way out of the city after the electrical grid collapses. I got a chance to interview the couple and talk about their healthcare experiences and how they influence the stories they tell in this novel. Check it out. Tony and Nancy, it's great to have you here on the show, and we're going to be talking about your book, PostGrid, and I'm really looking forward to chatting about this. It's very interesting. I kind of like reading post-apocalyptic adventures and science fiction and things like that. My own novels are based in a science fiction fantasy background as well. So that's my wheelhouse, and I'm really excited to chat with both of you about this particular book.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So let's start off, and maybe Nancy, you can go first. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know you're a nurse, but you've done some EMS work as well, and you can tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Tony and I met driving the ambulance. We were partners as EMTs. Tony was finishing his degree in law enforcement, and I had started nursing school. And we continued to do volunteer fire department, and then we moved back to Arizona. We went into medical rescue with the sheriff's department and did medical rescue, search and rescue. And then when our girls, 13 years later, got old enough to do search and rescue, we went over to Civil Air Patrol. And Tony was cadet commander, and that means that we were in charge. Well, he was in charge, and then being the wife and the first lieutenant, I was right alongside. And we taught the kids navigation, survival, medical, all that type of thing.
So Nancy left out that she actually was an EMT at age 16 in North Carolina.
Excellent.
She started in the volunteer rescue squad as well as the volunteer fire department. So she started in the field.
When back then, you could join the rural rescue squad at 15, but you couldn't run calls till you had your EMT and were 16.
That's the same way it is here in Maryland, actually. And, I'm a member of my local volunteer company as a paramedic and started out there as an EMT and actually as an aide running calls just as a third on the ambulance to help, do whatever needed to be done while the providers took care of care. So I've worked my way up through the ranks, too. I know how it works. Nancy, you also have some ER background as a nurse as well.
Oh, yeah, I did ER most of my career, which is still, I'm still in nursing, but I'm just doing endoscopy. Probably going to be starting an ACLS PALS instructor here in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
But, I've done ER and obstetrics and critical care transport.
Imaging?
Yep, 30 years.
OB.
Wow. And Tony, you have a law enforcement background, but you've also been a flight medic. You were an EMT, as you said. You guys have just a varied background. I really love how many different things involved with first response you guys have been involved with, search and rescue, law enforcement, nursing in the ER, ambulance providers, all the areas, really.
Yeah, short attention spans. I started both in law enforcement and as an EMT kind of simultaneously at the same time. So when I was in college, I went ahead and took an EMT class, assuming that I was going into law enforcement, and I'd always been fascinated with that sort of thing. So I after college, I became a deputy United States Marshal, and I did that for about 5 years. And along with that, I was the one that had the EMT bag. So I was what would now be the SWAT medic. Mm-hmm. But that was before we said things like that.
Yep.
And then through time, I went ahead and became an intermediate EMT at various points and a paramedic. Originally, when I was a paramedic, we were living in Washington at the time, and I worked on the ambulance there. And it was a great place to do that. It was a very small county. There were just 20 paramedics in the county. And so we had very close supervision, which meant that we got a lot of ability to do things. We had pretty much a carte blanche. So that was really nice, a good place to learn. So in addition to in town, we had a lot of rural and even wilderness type response. I think the longest call I went on was a 2.5-hour call to get up to the top of Mount Hood.
Wow.
So, excuse me, not Mount Hood. Was it
Mount St. Helens?
Mount St. Helens.
Oh, wow.
So there we go. And so it was a good place to learn. And there's no better way to be a paramedic than to be thrown in the back and say, by the way, you're the only paramedic showing up on this call. You better know how to get through it.
A little bit of a gut check there.
Yeah. So that was good. And then from there, I have worked as a flight paramedic, did that for about 5 years here in the Phoenix area. A lot of fun. Again, back to the wilderness stuff, Nancy mentioned that we would were members of the medical rescue posse for the sheriff's office. And what the posse does is that is involved in providing medical and rescue services into wilderness and backcountry area, in addition to taking care of the lakes and the rivers. So in the summer, we were just inundated with wrecks, fights, drownings, boat wrecks, quad accidents, climbing accidents. So again, a lot of good opportunity to do some backcountry, all on your own type of experiences here. And our new EMTs in the Phoenix area don't have a lot of chance to volunteer. So to bring in a brand new EMT and say, oh, by the way, there's only two guys working and you're one of them, and the other guy's going to be on the south end, it's a good way to really develop those skills that otherwise you just don't get to use in a urban setting.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. It's funny. I talk to a lot of urban medics who are like, oh, you guys out in the sticks, you don't have any chance to practice your skills as much as we do. We get stabbings and gunshot wounds and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, try to have you guys get to dump your patients off at the hospital 10 minutes after you pick them up. How'd you like to have a patient for a half hour, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and you're the only person that is responsible for their care? And
yeah, how would you like to stay overnight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's interesting because you guys, you know, have that experience of the wilderness EMS and the austere environment care that where you really have to think outside the box. You have to really think more like almost a nurse, really, with that long-term care approach. You know, the EMS, we're taught to worry about the first hour or so of the patient's care, maybe longer if we're in a rural setting, whereas, you know, when I went to nursing school, I realized that this care window extended throughout the patient's life, and certainly in the long term for days. So it's interesting how you guys have really adapted that to this book.
Yes.
So
we had lots of fun with this because, you know, nobody really wants to sit down and read 14 hours of, you know, your medical call.
Right.
So we kind of got to do it in a fun way, you know, where we put in obstetrics, we put in gunshot wounds, and, you know, Tony being law enforcement, he got to put in gunfights. It was fun.
Yeah, and that's what I really like about it is that, and I really look forward to reading books by healthcare professionals because we provide a more realistic view of what happens in medical care. You know, when I teach ACLS or teach a CPR class or something like that, I constantly tease people and say, you know, ask them this question: what's the only rhythm you can shock only on television?
Yes,
and you probably know the answer to that question.
Right,
it's asystole, right? You know, and so I always jump in with that because I know it grinds on everybody else's nerves as much as it does mine. So it's great to read a book by people who know what they're talking about. But what spurred you to actually jump in and say, let's write a novel together?
You know, I think we have our egos are too big. You read a book and you go, you know, I can do that. No problem, I can do that. Well, you know, after a lot of time trying to teach yourself how to do it, you can do that. You know?
Yep. People ask us how long it took to write the book, and we always joke 1 year to write, or 1 year to learn how to write, 1 year to write it.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how long it takes. I mean, it's not just, I mean, yeah, you can maybe get that first draft banged out relatively quickly, and by quickly, I mean in maybe a month and a half or so, maybe quicker. But then it's the rewrites and the fixing the story arc and all of those things that go into really writing a really good book. And I think you guys have accomplished that.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. But, you know, and here's the other thing. As you know, as a writer yourself, you always hope to improve over what you did last time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this constant trying to learn and then, oh, you know, I learned that, but I didn't implement it. I need to go back and I need to do that. So there's just a constant struggle and attempt to improve what your, you know, your craft and your ability to write something that people really enjoy reading.
So you've got a book. Kelly's the main character, the nurse that
yep.
tries to get out when the electromagnetic pulse strikes. And along the way, she picks up a sheriff's deputy in need along the way that is wounded and needs assistance. And together, the two of them kind of gather this group together to survive following this apocalyptic event.
Right. And, you know, so we kind of start in town and then go through the initial recognition that the electric's out and probably is not coming back. And then we have to make our way to somewhere there where there aren't 4 million other people, mm-hmm. which is the city of Phoenix.
One of the things, you know, we talk about this starting with an electrical magnetic pulse. And, you know, for those that don't know, what this is about is you lose your electrical power grid and a lot of your devices from a nuclear weapon that's exploded high in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
What that does is it sends out a pulse of
highly charged energy. Electric,
yeah, of ions, and that takes out the power grid and other things. When we wrote our book, we wrote it so that all electrical stuff stopped. Now, that's probably not realistic, but you know what? It makes my decisions as a writer a lot easier instead of trying to decide what thing can miraculously work when I need it to and what thing can't work when it's best for the story.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. You have to take some artistic license. I mean, in my books, I mean, they're set in a paranormal urban world, much like our own, except that the creatures of myth and legend live alongside us. So, and these are paramedics whose sole job is to provide care to werewolves, vampires, mummies, fairies, elves, you name it.
You bet.
And so I had a lot of fun doing the same thing, which was, look, you're going to suspend your disbelief. You're not going to ask me a lot of questions. Everything's going to be as medically sound as I can make it, but there's a story and there's other things going on and I want you to enjoy it along the way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, the fun part with us is since our book is in a local environment, we did a lot of playing with places and place names and whatnot. So the book starts in a hospital where Nancy and I both worked out of.
It no longer exists.
Right.
You know, and then we go to places. You know, I'm a deputy constable here in the county. I still work hand in hand with the sheriff's office and whatnot, and I know those folks. And one of my deputy friends was reading the draft of the book, and they talk about going into a small town called Fountain Hills, and he says, "I knew exactly where I was. I knew that store. You know, I know those places." And for the local folks, that's a lot of fun because they get to see that up front. And then we do a lot of playing with names. If you're a local person, you'll recognize family names,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the appropriate place. You'll recognize the puns on names and that sort of stuff. And it's really less for the reader and
but more
for us.
But we did a lot of medical names too. A lot of our characters are named after the medical conditions that they have.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, you know, you'll see that our diabetics are named after, you know, the founder of insulin.
Right.
And the people with CHF are named after the person that made the first, you know, mechanical heart. And so it's kind of fun that way, too, to figure out why we named characters the way we did.
So what's next? I mean, you've got this book. It's been out for, what, about a year, a little over a year, I guess. And
yep, sequel's coming up.
Excellent. When do you have a date planned? Do you think you know
when
it's going
to
be done?
Oh, we don't have a date. You know, we're not professional writers mm-hmm. in that we don't do it full time. So both having jobs and children and grandchildren, it's hard to get in enough time to write as much as we'd like.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Do you have a working title for the next book?
No.
Okay.
Postgrid 2.
Postgrid 2. So I urge everybody to check it out. It's a great book. I'm about halfway through and enjoying myself reading it. And thank you very much for the complimentary copy of the book. I really enjoy it. And so I'm going to make sure I link to it in the book. But is there any place particular you'd like people to go to find out more information about the book or where they can purchase it?
On Amazon.com. It comes in Kindle Unlimited, Kindle, and paperback.
Excellent.
And so all of our marketing goes right to Amazon. The other thing is we have information on our Facebook page, Facebook Postgrid. So we put up interesting articles. We have an interesting article right now on the efficacy of ACLS drugs. Really interesting. Shows very little difference between administering drugs and not administering drugs.
Believe me, I follow that stuff very closely.
Right. So Amazon and Facebook.
Yeah, I think our problem with the ACLS stuff is that we're old enough in the system to know that we've been through this cycle before.
Yeah. You guys remember bicarb, you know, just routinely being.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean, let's push it. And now we would never think about it. And you tell people that, you know, we used to push bicarb like it was candy. And they'd be like, well, why would you do that? And, well, we didn't, you know, why do we do some of the things we still do?
That's right.
That's a question to ask. So that's great. So we'll look for the site on Facebook, and I'll have links to that. And we'll also have links to the book on Amazon. I urge people to check it out. It's a great read. And we'll stand by for Postgrid 2. Do me a favor, guys, when you have Postgrid 2 out, please reach out to me. I'd love to have you back on the show.
Okay.
You bet.
You bet.
That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. Make sure you follow up, though, on all of the information you picked up in this episode. Head over to nursingshow.com and check out the episode's show notes. There's a link right there at the top of the page. In there are listings for all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. From the most recent one at the top, you can scroll down and go all the way back to the very first episode. But I want you to get the full information there with links to other resources so that you understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me your comments, your questions, suggestions, news links. Help support the Nursing Show community with your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter. There's a link and form right on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site, so fill out that short form, and we'll send you the links to each episode's show notes directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me on social media sites. I'm available there under the handle PodMedic, so you can find me there under twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic, so friend or follow me. You can also become a member of the community over on Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page at facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button there and join the conversation on that page. I post other nursing and healthcare articles and pictures on the Nursing Show site throughout the course of each week and over at the Nursing Show page, so check it all out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. Remember, it comes out every Friday for you, so you can wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.